countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Now with our highest ever readership of 321,000 weekly readers. Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing 295,000 readers the latest farming news and the best of rural Ireland weekly.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. I'm Marty Morrissey, and between now and nine, we meet award-winning cheesemakers. We hear all about fertiliser prices, and we hear grassroots stories from the GAA. But first, this week has been a tough week, a week when COVID brought an old Greek word into everyday talk with the new variant Omicron. At times like this, there is something particularly comforting about tradition. The tradition of the toy show with all those joyous children on the telly last night, or the traditional smells and flavours of Christmas baking. Peter Ward and his wife Mary are in their 40th year in business in their Country Choice shop and cafe in the heart of Nenagh in County Tipperary. They're busy all year round, but they're particularly busy coming up to Christmas as demand for their legendary puddings is high. The recipe they used was a gift from a customer way back in 1982, the year that they opened their shop. But whatever recipe you see, Peter Ward explained to me, the secret to a great pudding lies in making it by hand and by using truly excellent ingredients. They source theirs from around the world, as he showed me when I visited Nenagh this week.
The first thing, there's a great golden raisin all the way from South Africa. It offers colours and it's tart. The best currants in the world are the smallest currants in the world. Those are also South African. They're a very high grade. They're very soft, no residual sugar, and they don't taste like grit. Now, the next ones we have are the very famous Five Crown. Five Crowns is the value. 3 crowns, 4 crowns, 5 crowns. The highest value of an Australian sultana. Again, dried out in the open air, hand-picked grapes, and a wonderful flavour. So the next thing we have is some Spanish figs, wild, picked off the trees, dried on the trees, and certainly some Christmas cake recipes. I'm not sure if it's Mary Berry or Delia, but I know some of the Theodora Fitzgibbon recipes call for figs in them, some of the very rich ones. Now, probably one of my great favourites in the shop are these black cherries from Pedrengo in the north of Italy, an Amarena cherry. In Italy, they mix them up in a cassata with some vanilla ice cream and eat them. And for us, it's very much a part of a fruitcake here. I suppose my favourite of all is this mix of dried peel, because there's no doubt about it, mixed peel is a hate thing for many people in a cake. It would stick in your teeth and it's a bit hard by times. But this mix here that we make up ourselves, it's got glacé mandarins, it's got angelica, it's got whole lemon peel, and the lemon is French. The orange peel is Italian. The angelica comes from France as well. We've glacé apricots here, like you'd get if you're in Fauchon or Hédière today in France. And then we've a little bit of pineapple in it, and we have some melon as well. And that's our mix for our mixed peel.
Our apples from Care, from down the road, they're the only Irish produce that you have.
Yeah, well, of course, you'd have the butter, you'd have the eggs, you'd have the bread, you'd have the Guinness, you'd have the brandy, you'd have the grated carrots, you'd have lots of things like that as well.
So we have the ingredients. What happens next?
Well, I generally bring them in that back door on a wheelbarrow from my warehouse. Anyone who see me crossing the road, I'm forever crossing that road in a wheelbarrow. And I deposit them into the kitchen. This is the kitchen. It's really and truly, it's the heart of the house. In terms of production, you'll see it's a bigger space. Now the oven is on, there's puddings cooking there. I'm going to hand you over to my great friend Mary McDonough, or I'll work with her. She is the officer in charge, along with my wife Mary, for the puddings, and she's going to do a dry mix followed by a wet mix of Christmas puddings.
Now, Mary McDonough,
yes,
this is your moment. You're going to teach me how to make a Christmas pudding.
Mary played camogie for Dublin, Marty.
Oh, excuse me. An all-star hurler. Camogie
no
star.
I wouldn't tussle with her today, Marty.
Well, Mary McDonough, former Dublin camogie star, away you go. Tell me what to do.
So we'll start with our flour first. We'll throw this in. And then our almonds.
Right.
And then our coconut. And then our ground almonds. So we give that a mix.
And you're doing this by hand, I look at you?
It's all done by hand. Then we add our mixed orange zest of orange. We add our special mix of spices. It's our own. It's a secret ingredient, our spices. It's not something we buy.
So it's mixed. I can smell it here.
Can you smell it?
I can, yeah.
And then we add our fruit. So we have our raisins, our sultanas, and all our currants all going in. And they're mixed together.
Peter was telling me that everything is done by hand. How important is that?
Because you get the feel. You break down. It's just unreal. I know you won't have great nails after it, Marty. They're all peeled. But it's done by hand. You get a feel for the mix when you do it. Then we add our lovely brown sugar.
Right.
Do that again. Tomatoes. Now we have our grated carrot, which goes in.
It smells lovely without it ever being cooked.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't it?
And then we add our pea. And then comes our Guinness. And then our drop of brandy goes in. Then we have our treacle.
God, everything is going into this.
Yeah. Mix that together. Then we have our orange juice. That goes in. As you can see, Marty, it's a good workout. I'll tell you, your shoulders would be quite sore afterwards. You'd need a massage from Peter if he was around, but he's not. Mary probably gets that.
I'm sorry, we don't provide those facilities as employers.
But she ran my shop in the milk market in Limerick for 10 years,
yes.
And there was nobody ever could contradict her on soccer, rugby, off the four corners of the world, hurling, camogie, motorsport, anything that ever was, Mary had an expertise on it.
Because I have an interest in it.
Yeah.
And when you have an interest, you have you know about it.
And Mary, changing subject for the moment, will Tipperary win the All-Ireland in 2022?
I don't know about Tipperary winning the All-Ireland in 2022. I hope Galway's does. Because I'm from Galway originally, and we have the Kilkenny man gone over to train us this year.
But now she's a big smiling.
He always hated him, but anyway, he's back now to help us.
Henry Shefflin is going to Galway.
Henry Shefflin is going to Galway.
And Mary, would you
now,
know
so the
now?
The eggs now going in after that.
Okay, now before you put in the eggs, would you know through the feel of your fingertips and your hand whether that's coming together nicely or not? And would you know it?
Yes.
And what kind of a feel would you have to have?
You'd have to have that it was well mixed. There was no lumps. You know, everything was mixed in. So then the eggs would go in and...
You're good at breaking the eggs, Mary.
Yeah, I break many eggs. Now, sometimes we use duck eggs as well. They give a nice light feel to it.
Oh, here's the recipe.
Duck eggs.
Where am I? Yeah, this is our 1982 book.
This is when you started.
Yes.
And the Christmas pudding, was that given to you by somebody?
That recipe was gifted to us in the first year of our business from a customer. And we have altered it and adjusted it a little bit. The principal adjustments really were that it was a recipe with Smithwick's barley wine. We reluctantly moved over to Guinness, but it turned out to be wonderful. Another great change that took an awful lot of consideration on parliamentary meetings in the House was, would we drop the suet?
Right.
Would we drop the suet? So we went into the butter and we moved over. It comes up the road from Arabon on a trolley. But we love butter.
And with the breadcrumbs, Peter.
Yeah, they're in, Mary. Yes,
oh, yeah, the breadcrumbs go in. So, no, Marty, that's it coming together.
Right.
So then we get our 2 pounds... tins.
What's the sound of the Christmas pudding?
Lovely mix, the lovely sloppiness of it. Like,
I mean,
it's just lovely. Now,
the sloppiness and the smell.
Smell of orange.
We have one nearly ready to come out of the oven.
Well, before it does, Mary, do you think the skills and the talent that you have and that Peter's wife had over the last 40 years, do you think that's a dying art, that the next generation will continue on what you're doing here by hand?
I don't think they will. To be honest with you, they love to eat it. Now, I'll talk about my own daughter. She loves Christmas pudding. Do you think she would make that?
No.
No. It's sad, really.
Yeah.
But they love, somebody, they'll eat somebody else's, they'll eat Peter's, so somebody will have to continue to do that. The no, the shop-bought one is nothing like the homemade one that we get out of here. They do appreciate that, and maybe in time they will go back to, you know, they've seen it. We all went back to what our mothers did, really, at the end of the day, didn't we? We always thought about, you know, that's the way Mammy did it. So probably, they probably will. We pass on, anyway, I pass on my skills. I tell them there's nothing like the best fruit, the best, you know, that's what you put in, you get out of your food at the end of the day, and it tastes well.
The smell is just fabulous. I've seen what Mary McDonough did. How about the oven? Because okay, it's quite warm in here.
The oven is, oops, absolutely. Big steaming oven here, Marty. Here we are, and we just take out this pudding. Mary, come over here and taste this and see. Now, that's the pudding just out. It's domed. Oh, look at this. Look, absolutely beautiful.
It does look beautiful.
Can you smell it there now?
Mm. Oh yeah, oh my gosh.
It's light
rich.
In colour now. Do you notice it's light in colour? Because we don't like, I always describe it as, I don't like a pudding that's like a sod of turf.
Yes.
I don't like it too black. So it's quite crumbly. And you, the first thing you're going to taste off this, Marty, fruit, dried fruit.
And oh gosh, here comes the spoon and the brandy butter. And getting into the fruit. I love raisins myself, I have to tell you now. It is gorgeous. And that was the taste of pure Christmas from Country Choice in Nina. Thank you to Peter Ward and Mary McDonough for the warm seasonal welcome. And what is interesting is that two knowledgeable women, Pauline Nevin and Nicola Molloy, are in the shop in the run-up to Christmas to guide you through buying the ingredients for Christmas baking and much more. I have to admit, I really enjoyed my visit to Nina. And you know what? I think I could give making a Christmas pudding a rattle. Not too sure what way it would come out, but we'll give it a try.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Now with our highest ever readership of 321,000 weekly readers.
Welcome back to Countrywide. Well, every 2 years, COSH, the Association of Irish Farmhouse Cheesemakers, organise the Irish Cheese Awards to celebrate the art of Irish cheesemaking. The award winners this year include many cheeses that have become household names, cheeses like Cashel Blue or Saintola. But there were brand newcomers who were winners too. This year, a gold award in the milk cheese under 6 months category was won by a couple who milk 4 Shorthorns on a 6-acre holding in West Cork. Mike Parrell and Darcy Mayfield moved there from England 5 years ago. They left behind previous lives in opera and restaurants for a simpler life of self-sufficiency. Their Lost Valley dairy makes two cheeses, and it was their Carrignamuck cheese that scooped the gold award. Hannah Quinn Mulligan travelled to meet them and began by asking Mike if they were still milking over the winter.
I'm still milking one of them just till Christmas, so as we're not buying milk, basically.
Okay. I've arrived at a lovely little farm here in West Cork. We've got Mike Parrell and Darcy Mayland, who are cheesemakers here and have won a very, very prestigious award. And we also have their young helper here. Ned, how old are you?
7.
Cork is known for having the most dairy cows in Ireland, and yet when I was driving down here, I think it's fair to say that it's quite rocky, and I saw an awful lot of sheep, not dairy cows, and your dairy cows were the first ones that I've seen for a couple of miles easily. What was the response when you came and people found out that you were going to buy dairy shorthorns and milk them?
People were really interested. There was a lot of dairying here up until maybe the early 90s. Most of the farms would have had some dairy, and there'd have been more mixed farms. So everyone was quite interested and sort of coming down to have a look, and luckily the first cow bought was nice. So
and she had twins.
No, it was a good cow, and she had twins. So like,
And is it a little bucket plant, or what kind of milking machine are you using?
It's one of the ones that spins around with the vanes in that nobody's even seen before. I bought it off a guy in Kerry who'd done it up to take it to the shows as like a showpiece.
It's an antique milking machine.
Yeah, he thought it was hilarious that I was buying it to use, but it's done. It's on its third year. It's still running with daily encouragement.
And Darcy, were you similarly idealistic when you arrived?
Oh, that's a hard question. I don't know what to say.
Well, if you could go back in time, would you still do it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We work so hard. Like, we work from the minute we get up to the minute we go to bed, but we enjoy everything we do. And also, we get to spend so much time with our little boy as he's growing up.
And Darcy, you're going to farmers markets then,
yes,
with the cheese. I mean, was that a new venture for you as well?
I'd done some work on markets before. I used to work in Middleton Farmers Market making coffee. So I knew that I would enjoy going back to work in farmers markets because it's such a great atmosphere. You don't really feel like you're at work. You feel like you're having chats and selling a bit of cheese along the way. So I do Bantry Market and Skibbereen Market, and it's great crack.
And what's the response been like to the cheese?
Great. People love it. It's actually so interesting. When you're selling at farmers markets, the people buying the cheese ask questions that I never thought they would ask. So sometimes someone come up to me and the first thing they'll ask is, what fertilizer do you use? Or tell me about what kind of breed you're milking, and just really specific questions. They're a discerning customer.
Okay. Ned, do you want to show me these cows inside and tell me a bit about them? Okay, we're going to follow Ned inside then. What type of cattle are they?
Very Shorthorns. This one's Daisy.
Okay.
This one's Kate. And then the one back there is Gertrude, and this one's Tildy.
And do you have a favourite?
I think Gertrude.
And I heard you went to an All-Irish school, is that right? So, Cahir Ba Atáin. How many?
Cahir.
Ah, Ottawa. So we're just going to head down now and we're going to see where the cheese is made. This is some setup that you have. And what gave you the idea? What type of cheese are you making? Because I'm looking inside and I can just see big shelves and round after round of cheese.
It's a straightforward style of cheese. It's not a sort of fancy, complicated way to make cheese. It's usually called a tom or a toma, depending if you're in France or Italy. It's loosely based on a northern Italian recipe.
The other thing with making the tom and like making such a simple recipe is that although it is kind of a French-Italian recipe, it is also probably the kind of cheese they would have made in Ireland, I don't know, 200 years ago?
Yeah, or more.
People often give out about the red tape and kind of regulations, and you are raw, unpasteurised milk. I mean, how has that process been for you two?
To be honest, we've had quite a lot of support from the department. They are strenuous, and, we are tested more often than if we were pasteurising. But we've always felt like they've been fair, and it's always kind of been from a place of they want us to make it work. They're not trying to catch us out. They're trying to help us get there.
We've come back out now and the sun is setting over Carrigmuck, and we're being very good and staying outside, but in front of me is a platter of cheese and it looks absolutely delicious and really creamy and pale. So I'm just going to try some now. One second.
This is actually the award-winning batch as well. This is from the same wheel that won the gold medal.
Can I have some too?
Can I have some?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll have some. Yeah, I think Ned summed it up there. It's delicious. It really is absolutely scrumptious. And I see what you mean. It is just that kind of creamy flavour. It just stays in your mouth, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's absolutely brilliant. So you only have less than, roughly 6 acres, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. The $1 million question as well. Are you making money now?
No.
The cheese is so good.
Yeah, well, I think the great thing is that we are at a point where we know that the cheese would sell. So now we've got to work out how to scale it so that we stay true to what we are, i.e. try and milk 8 cows. And then we're still kind of that local small farmhouse cheesemaker is hardly going big, milking 8. But it would pay us a wage that we could live off. Basically, we need a bit more farm, like everyone else.
And that was finishing Hannah Quinn Mulligan's report. And don't you love Mike and Darcy's love of what they do and their love of cheese? You can find out all about Mike and Darcy's cheeses at thelostvalleydairy.com. I love when people are enthusiastic and love what they do. Good, mentioning love and enthusiasm, good morning, PJ Cunningham, Offaly man, journalist, and indeed author. And you got a great idea for a book during lockdown, PJ Cunningham. Tell me all about it. Welcome to the studio, by the way.
Thanks a million, Marty. Well, look, it was something was in my head for years that you hear about all the great All-Ireland winners and All-Star winners and things like that. But it's the stories that you hear in the clubs and in the pubs and on the sideline and going to and from matches. And I just said to myself, they were never actually written down in the form that is a book, which is permanent and yet it's accessible. You know, I know people go into archives and do some of those sort of things. But believe it or not, Marty, the week of lockdown was the week I started working on the book. And the first person I got in contact with was, I just said it to you a minute ago, Tommy Moynihan, who was in his 90s.
In Monaghan.
In Monaghan. But I didn't realise, I had gone up there many years ago in 83. John Tracy married his daughter and I was covering it for the Indo. And as I arrived at Des Moines in Scotstown, you're 100% right, Scotstown. As I arrived there, the Tracys arrived up from Waterford, all the entourage going to Des Moines beforehand. But I just knocked on the door and Tommy came out and he heard me bog accent. He says, what part of the country are you from? And I said, Clara County, Offaly. Yeah. And he says, Sheila, Lord of Mercy, and his wife, come over here, quick, quick, quick. This is a Clara man. And the Tracys were left standing when he started telling me that he had gone down to serve his time in D.E. Williams's in Clara many, many years ago. He'd won a minor medal with Offaly while he was there. But his story is one of the most amazing. He had an identical twin brother, Mackie. And because in 1945, the emergency was on, you couldn't travel if you're in a different county. And Mackie was in boarding school in Louth. So he had to play for Louth, who were beaten in the Leinster final by Kevin Heffernan's Dublin. Meanwhile, Monaghan won the Ulster. And in the All-Ireland semi-final against the oldest minor team ever, seemingly that took Crow Park from Leitrim, they were playing Leitrim. But didn't Tommy break his arm just before half time?
Oh dear.
Now, yeah, absolutely. But Mickey Duffy, Pádraig Duffy's father, was over the team. And Pádraig Duffy's father said, well, Mackie is in the stand there, we'll get him. So they switched. And the only one that knew about it was Stooky Kerr, who was the selector. They didn't tell the Monsignor, who was also a selector, in case he had a moral dilemma about sneaking fellow on without actually making a substitution at all. And the only other one who ever knew was their mother up in the stand. She said in the second half, that's not Howard Tommy, that's Mackie playing. Now, it would never have been known, Marty, except some 20, 25 years later, Michael O'Hare used to have a magazine programme in the 60s. And he had the records on with the Moynihans one night. And Mackie told a story and the whole place erupted because no one had ever known that, you know, a switch, a phantom Crow Park soap that no one ever knew. And of course, nowadays if that happened, not only would the county be suspended, the club suspended, you'd be thrown out for years.
Yeah. And just stay on him for a moment, because you also spoke to Dan Kerr, who's 100 years of age.
Dan is 100 years of age, and three lovely stories, Marty, about going to All-Irelands in the 30s. One, he had a car crash going, didn't end up in it one time. Another time he got in via the canal end because he didn't have a ticket. And the third time he was trying to look good and there was a lovely good looking girl with no ticket. He gave her the ticket and he hoped something had come out.
Romantic. I like Dan already. Yeah.
And you're speaking of one, Nudie Hughes.
Oh, great.
Funniest
Nudie.
Story of Nudie impersonating Brian Kerr as the Ulster manager. You know, they were down in Mayo playing a Railway Cup semi-final. And the, if you like, the Monaghan stroke Armagh car arrived first. And Nudie was driving, you see, and the Armagh lads and went in ahead. And they could hear the reception. Oh, no, we can't allot the bedrooms until Mr. McAniff arrives, you see. Mm. And Nudie said, oh, that's me, I'm here. So there seemed to be very bad blood between, I think it was Tyrone and Down that year. So he put the Tyrone and Down lads in together in beds. And he had all the plush beds for the Armagh lads and himself. But Nudie tells this story. And it's a beautiful story because he's talking about what might have been in winning All-Irelands and getting to an All-Ireland final, but also the joy of playing and winning. And as he got older, you know, and wish Nudie well. He's he's going through a tough time, but he's a great man.
And that's just one. And that's just one county. And you have a story? Do you have a story about Michael Hogan as well?
Oh yeah, very
which I found amazing. My producer Eileen Heron was telling me before we went on air.
Absolutely, a man called Oliver McMahon rang me out of the blue during this lockdown. He said, "Look, I don't know if this is a story or not, but." He said, many years ago when Crow Park was being knocked down in the 1990s, he said, I was sitting with my mother, who was then in her 90s, watching it on the news. I think it was Colin Murray or somebody was giving a little story on it. And She said, all of a sudden, my mother says, you know, I was there on Bloody Sunday, Ollie. And she says, geez, mother, you kept that very quiet over the years. You know, as you,
yeah,
as you,
yes,
would,
you would, yeah.
So what were you doing there in the name of God? She said, I was Mick Hogan's girlfriend. And I said, I don't believe you.
Really?
She said, yeah, he had written to me on the week before to say she was in boarding school in Dublin. And he had written to her to say, look, I'll be up Sunday. So she was there Sunday with her friend. Yeah, the shooting started, the auxiliaries, the Black and Tans came in, taking reprisals for what had happened earlier on the day. And she escaped, as she said, as Ollie said, on her elbows and knees, oh, out, God, of Croke Park, went across to the south side of the city to a Tipperary pub, and found out that night that her boyfriend had been killed.
My God.
Yeah, and down,
I never story, heard that before.
No, I asked Paul Rouse about it, who's an eminent historian.
Absolutely, yeah.
Good afternoon, of course, as well. But
you're a Clannish crowd in Offaly, yeah?
No, he hadn't heard of it. I suppose Mick, what do you call it, the guy who wrote the definitive Bloody Sunday.
Oh, Mick Foley.
Yeah, Mick will probably know whether that was true or not. But it's just a lovely vignette, Martin, yeah, just that dropped into our hands there. You know?
Now, I was in Kerry last night with Peter Keane, and I'm sure you have loads of good Kerry stories. But I'm going to concentrate on my own,
yeah,
because the best excuse I've ever heard of a match being cancelled came from my own county of Clare.
No, absolutely. Pádraic Mac Mahúna. What a great... Yeah, Pádraic, I think, is 87 years young this year.
Oh, he's a great man.
But, Marty, you know when I said... People say, how many stories are in that book? There's actually about six stories in Pádraic. Little three or four pages, which are so good. But the one about the match being it was Vincent McInerney, now who's the brother of the famous Dan McInerney, who kept rings scoreless and was able to mark Mackie and all that sort of stuff. You'd know that from Clare. But he knew there was no point in going to the chairman of the fixtures committee before the Sunday morning, because he said the lad didn't like him and he wouldn't postpone the match. But on the morning, he sent a telegram. You know, it was basically... stop, can't fulfil fixture, stop. Hitler's forces have invaded Holy Island, stop. Our team, most of which are on the local defence association, whatever it was, forces, are gone out. They're putting country first today before club.
That is the best excuse I ever heard of a match being cancelled. What club was that? We may as well just...
Was it Scariff? I think Scariff, it was, now from memory, Mark.
Fair play to Scariff. Yeah. Look, I could talk to you all morning, as you know, Peter Cunningham, but I'm running out of time. The book is called Grassroots, Stories from the Heart of the GAA. And if you have a GAA anecdote or story you'd like to share for Volume 2?
Volume 2, pj@gastories.ie, Marty. And Marty, may I say one thing before I go? Look, I've adapted an old slogan for the new one. And it is that a GAA book isn't just for Christmas, it's for life. So buy Marty's new book. Buy Eileen Dunn of this parish has a great book out with her sister Moira.
Yeah.
It was at the launch. Really good book. And my friend John Scully has a great book out as well.
You've done the whole lot now. You're a real politician.
But don't forget Grassroots.
PJ Cunningham, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. John Connell, I'm changing subjects very briefly. John Connell is a farmer, a writer, and a regular contributor to Countrywide. As the season turned towards Christmas, John has sent us some thoughts on Advent from his Longford farmyard.
It has been a long year, a hard year, a year of waiting and seeing, of hoping, and at times despairing. It has been a year where we have sought the corners of light to come out from the woodwork of the self. It is the start of Advent, and I am in the farmyard. After a summer of fields and greenery, the days of fodder and ritual have returned again. The smell of silage is everywhere in the air, and the animals of the farm are inside and waiting. Advent is by its nature a time of waiting, a time when all the good work of the year will come to pass. Already the cows are brimming with yet unborn calves, while the sheep will make our own nativity in the lean-to shed. We have, all of us, lived through another season of the great sickness. It has beaten us in new ways, but as I walk in the fields and see the winter greenery, I know that even in this dying, trying time, nature is still here, our clay souls are still intact, and the earth is still listening. As the candles are lit each week of Advent, and as we wait, we hope that this Christmas can be like the ones of old. We hope borders will remain open, and long-lost friends and family will return to us. In the skyscrapers of America and in the outback of Australia, the promise of home is calling anew, and the longed-for hugs of yesterday can be had again this time in the reality of the now. Christmas, that far-off whisper, is coming closer. I think farmers and this time of year go together. There were farmers there on that first Christmas night so long ago, shepherds and stable boys and wise old asses. Animals formed the first circle around the king, as they do for us. They were and are all part of that first Advent prayer. When I was a boy in our school nativity play, I acted as a farmer on that stage. Though I did not know it, I was practicing for the life that lay ahead of me. With hushed solemnity, we carried our four lambs and calves to meet the King of Kings. We felt all the better as the crowds cheered us on, seeing themselves in us. This will be my seventh Advent home, back in the land that knows my name. 7 long years, time enough to grow and change, time enough for the earth to shape my face. 7 Advents that have made me the man I am. And when Christmas morning comes, I'll no doubt find myself in the shed like I have in years before, ministering in my own quiet way to new mothers in our own little Bethlehem of the fields. From a newborn lamb to a calf looking for a teat, they are all miracles of this season. So, for those of you getting ready for the days ahead, may your birthing be lucky, and may you find a touch of Christmas in the grey days. Here, in the clumsy beauty of an Irish winter, in the landscape of contemplation, we wait. We wait so we can reap together again. Now's the time to share truly in the land.
And that was John Connell, author of The Cow Book and The Running Book, ending this morning's Countrywide. Today's programme was produced by Eileen Herron, Brian Moss was broadcast coordinator, and Mark McGrath was on sound. Don't forget, Ear to the Ground is on RT1 TV on Thursday next at 7 o'clock. And Playback is up next after the 9 o'clock news. Damien will be back with you next week. And until I talk to you again, bye-bye, thank you for listening, and Hakuna Matata.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Now with our highest ever readership of 321,000 weekly readers.
Zero. It gets a bad rep, like when people say they have zero interest in something. Well, if you're thinking of buying an electric car this year, you'll find this interesting, because at Nissan we see the power of zero. Introducing the Nissan Leaf Power of Zero offer. Buy a brand new 100% electric zero emissions Nissan Leaf and get 1 year's free servicing, a free home charger, the lowest electric finance offer on the market, and great savings on running costs. Now that's the power of zero. Find out more at nissan.ie.
Here in the land we call deals, only one thing rules, and that's great prices. And great festive fashion. And great gift ideas, now I think about it. And great food. And great homewares. We do have great homewares. And great beauty products. Okay, so lots of things rule here, but all of them great. And all of them waiting for you this Christmas. Deals. Your land of amazing value.
If you are aged 60 to 69, you will soon be offered a COVID-19 vaccine booster dose. COVID-19 vaccines offer protection from serious illness, but this may weaken over time. The booster is recommended to give you the best possible protection. When it's time for your vaccination centre appointment, you will receive a text message from the HSE. It's very important to take up your booster appointment. For more information, visit hse.ie or call HSE Live on 1800 700 700 from the HSE.
It's not just a sewing machine. For Maya, it's a chance to give her family a better life. It's not just a way to make a living. It's a chance to give her daughter an education. Like thousands of mothers, Maya lives in fear of what the future holds for her little girl. And it's not just. This Christmas, your love can make all the difference. Visit Trocra.org or call 1850 408 408. Trocra. Until love conquers fear.
Coming up on Saturday at 1 p.m. with Damien O'Reilly, Green Party Deputy Leader Catherine Martin on her party's performance in government. Plus, how concerned should we be about the new COVID variant? And can the government avert the threat of another protest by hauliers who brought traffic in Dublin to a standstill this week in a protest over fuel prices? Tune in for news, debate and analysis with Damien O'Reilly, Saturday at 1 p.m. on RTE Radio 1.
Now though, on RTE Radio 1, we go to the newsroom and Tommy Mescal.
Good morning. The headlines. More countries have taken steps to protect their citizens from the COVID-19 variant first detected in southern Africa. The Green Party is holding its annual conference this weekend and online because of COVID-19 restrictions. And the celebrated composer and lyricist Stephen Sondheim has died. More countries have imposed severe travel restrictions on southern African nations because of the threat posed by a new strain of the coronavirus. Ireland and all other EU states have already applied restrictions on travel to and from South Africa and six other countries. Karen Creed reports.
Overnight, Australia, the United States and Canada imposed tough restrictions on travel to and from the southern African region. The move mirrors decisions taken yesterday by EU member states to suspend air travel from seven countries in the region in response to this new variant of concern. It was first detected in South Africa and has also been identified in Botswana, Belgium, Hong Kong and Israel. The World Health Organization has named the variant Omicron and said it would take a few weeks to understand its impact. Here, the government is advising Irish citizens in any of the affected African countries to return home as soon as possible. The Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, said anyone travelling to Ireland from any of these seven countries will have to home quarantine.
The Green Party leader, Eamon Ryan, has described the publication of the Climate Action Plan as a pivotal moment for his party. Launching its annual conference, he said he wanted to work with government and opposition parties